Support for WYPR comes from University of Maryland Medical System, committed to advancing the health of Maryland through academic medicine. With locations across the state, care is delivered close to home. Learn more at ummms.org.
Good afternoon. Welcome. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. Today it's midday on Money. Students have submitted their applications to colleges, and as those acceptance letters begin to arrive, families are facing the reality of figuring out how to pay for secondary education. Interest rates are a hot topic in Washington. President Trump has made it clear he thinks the Fed should lower them, but the current chairman, Jerome Powell, insists that the Fed is following the data, not the command of the commander-in-chief. And it's that time of year when a lot of folks think about their financial situation and focus on planning their financial futures. We're going to talk about saving, investing, and strategizing for that financial future today with Nicholas Abrams, a certified financial planner and the CEO of Opulentia, a financial services firm in Hunt Valley. Full disclosure, Opulentia has been an underwriter here at WIPR. Nicholas Abrams joins us on Zoom. You are welcome to join us as well with your questions about personal finance and managing your money. Our number here at midday, 410-662-8780, and our email, midday@wipr.org. So give us a call. Let us know what's on your mind when it comes to investing, when it comes to strategizing about saving for the things that are important to you. Again, the number 410-662-8780, or you can drop us an email, midday@wipr.org. Nick Abrams, welcome back. Always great to have you.
Hey, good afternoon, Tom. How are you? Good to be back.
Yeah, I'm doing fine. Thanks. So you are a certified financial planner. Let's talk about what that means. What does it mean to be certified in financial planning?
So what it means that you've gone through a set of courses and you've also taken a comprehensive exam that allows you to use the designation to be a certified financial planner. So you have to have certain qualifications. You have to be in the industry for a number of years, the number of hours of pre-work before you get to that, able to sit for the exam, a very comprehensive exam, covering estate planning, tax planning, retirement planning, investments, and insurance planning. And so after you have gone through the coursework of those areas, you sit for the exam, and then you're allowed to be classified as a certified financial planner. And then each year we have to take additional training and certified credits in order to maintain that status. So it's not one of those designations where you just sit for an exam and you're done. You have to constantly learn new information because the landscape of investing changes with new laws that are happening. So you have to be on top of that and have constant training in that area.
Yeah, tax law changes, estate law changes, rates go up, rates go down, et cetera. Yeah, so you got to stay on top of all of that. Now, a certified financial planner, folks who are in your business have firms like yours, Opulentia, are also known as fiduciaries. And fiduciaries have a particular responsibility by law, don't they? I mean, it's not just a designation that they made up for themselves.
So I will say a couple things with that, Tom, and I'm glad you brought that up. One is when you look at fiduciary status, one of the simplest ways to put it is we are required by law to put the client's interest ahead of our own. And what that means and how it benefits your listeners, you know, when you come to somebody that's a fiduciary, we're looking to give independent advice. We're not salespeople. We're not out just to sell one particular product because that's, you know, what we have to sell. You know, we're able to sit down, look at what your total picture is, and give you independent advice on what you should or should not do. And also, when you're working with a fiduciary, one of the biggest things is that we always disclose what our compensation is. And that's the key. You know what you're paying, whether you're paying a fee, or what that fee is. And so you have that comfort or knowing of what you're paying for, and you're dealing with somebody that's required to give you independent advice. and not just put you in a box and sell one particular product and service to you and you never see them again. So that's very important with anybody who's dealing with money or finances, looking for a financial advisor. You want to work with somebody that's certified and that's a fiduciary that has that extra layer of protection for you. And so definitely glad you brought that up,
Yeah,
Tom.
because if someone isn't a fiduciary, they may be inclined to sell one company's, mutual funds or one particular
Correct.
kind of investment rather than you can look at the entire landscape of what's out there and say, okay, for this person who wants to have, this goal, that goal, and the other goal, the best thing is you can pick and choose from a wider pool of possibilities, right?
Yeah, and one thing, when I'm meeting with people, Tom, I always, tell people, and it's kind of jokingly, tongue in cheek, I call myself a financial artist. Now, I am the least artistic person you'll ever meet in your life. But when you're sitting down with your advisor, whoever that person is, they should be looking at you as a blank canvas. And from there, be able to paint the picture of this is where you are today. This is where you want to be 5, 15, 20, 30 years from now. And really putting together that roadmap even before they're talking about products, what they sell and don't sell. That's sort of the back end of it. You want to be working with somebody who can relate and paint that picture to you, what your life should look like or what you want your life to look like. And that's really one of the important things of financial planning and working with an independent advisor. You get that, or you should be getting that expertise where you're not just being put in a cookie cutter scenario that they put all their clients in because everybody's situation is different. You want what's right for you and your family and your situation.
Nicholas Abrams is a certified financial planner. We're talking money today here on Midday. If you have a question or comment about finance, about investing, about saving, about retirement, or paying for college, or paying for that new car you'd like to buy, give us a buzz. 410-662-8780, or email midday@wipr.org. So, Nick, whether you're, taking the advice of a person like yourself, a financial planner, or doing it on your own, it is, you call yourself a financial artist. I mean, it is somewhat of an art and not a science. I mean, there's so many variables. There's so many things you can't predict, the stock market being the biggest one. You never know. It's generally accepted that investing at least some of your assets in the stock market's a good idea for most folks. But it is an art and not a science sometimes because, gee whiz, there's so many variables. I mean, how do you keep track of all that? How do you assuage the fears of people who say, gee whiz, I don't want to take these big risks?
So, Tom, I would say, what we see now, life is one of the biggest variables when we're planning this. We all have in our mind what we think our future is going to look like. But life has a funny way of throwing some curves, obstacles, roadblocks in there. And so, really, when you're doing financial planning, you have to be flexible. When I first started in this industry 26 years ago, we used to have these very thick binders with financial plans and charts and recommendations and all of that stuff we would give the clients. And we would realize we would go back to do our review meetings, and everything that we put together was now irrelevant because something changed in their life. So really, we tell people, communication is the key with your financial advisor because your life is going to change. It could be something a parent gets sick and all of a sudden you have to start supporting that parent and that was not part of your retirement plan. It can be something that your kid moves back home with the grandkids. That was not part of your retirement plan and that happens. It could be getting laid off. We've seen here in Maryland, 250,000 federal workers lost their jobs within the last year or so. That was not part of their financial plan. So you have to be flexible when you're planning, understanding that things are going to be happen, and you have to know how to pivot and readjust that plan. So any plan that you put together, whether you're doing it yourself or working with a professional, it has to be reviewed and monitored and updated for those changes that happen in life.
And by the way, not to call you on that, but that number may be 25,000 instead of 250,000. At least that's the last time I saw it. But I'm going to look that up because that. But it's still a lot of folks.
Yeah,
and
that's just the
federal workforce. I mean, that doesn't say anything about. I mean, here in Baltimore, we just had a restaurant close very abruptly. A place called Brewer's Art. It's been open for 30 years.
Yes.
And all those folks lost their job. They didn't even get paid for their last. Shift that they worked the last pay period, so clearly those things do happen. When it comes then to strategizing, coming up with an investment strategy, what does that encompass for you when you advise folks? I mean, because again, given that it's so variable and so unpredictable, it's tricky. To say, okay, here's how we're going to approach this problem.
So we look at it in phases. And I will tell you, one of the big things that we are seeing a lot of with clients, retirement landscape has changed. Years ago, Tom, you worked for a job, you did your 30 plus years, and you received a pension and your Social Security. So life was a lot easier back then in planning for retirement. You knew what you were going to get up front when you retired. Nowadays, very few companies offer that type of defined benefit or pension plan. And so all of the retirement is on you. You know, you spend 30 or 40 years accumulating assets, and then you have to figure out, once you do that, well, now how much money do I take out? Is that money going to last? And so retirement planning has changed where there's two phases. There's the accumulation phase while you're working, but that second phase and most important phase is the income phase. And we're seeing more and more changes to services and products and retirement plans where we're seeing legislation kind of going through to see with 401k plans, how can we start offering some type of guaranteed income from retirement plans now, because people are very concerned about what their income is going to be in retirement. We're seeing more and more companies offering products that will pay out a lifetime income in retirement. And that's what more and more people are trying to get to, because no matter how much money you have, you still have that angst about spending money in retirement because you don't know what's going to happen in the stock market. And you don't know if you're going to live to be 85 or 95 or 105. And will that money last you given inflation and taxes?
It's almost as if it's kind of impersonating a pension, you know,
I mean,
because pensions were guaranteed incomes that you got from your employer or from whatever branch of government you might work for or something like that, the military. It's scary. When I talk to folks who've recently retired, the biggest scary part of it is that all of a sudden you don't have any income because you're not getting a paycheck anymore.
Yeah.
And you've got to still live your life. Living your life can get scary if you don't have, a paycheck coming in. You got to be able to have income that comes from what you have, as you say, accumulated. What's your take on what I've always been told is the kind of common wisdom that as you get older, when you're closer to retirement than not, if you're in your 60s, your 70s, 80s, certainly, people generally recommend about a split of about 60% of your savings in the stock market and 40% in what they call income or the bond market. Whereas if you're 25 years old and you're just starting, you've been out of college a few years and you're starting to save, you would want to be a little more aggressive about your savings. You would put more in the stock market then and less in the bond market or less in income so that you can grow those assets, more aggressively. How is that general formula thought of these days in the financial industry?
So, Tom, that is kind of the old way how we thought of things. And a lot has changed history has changed people's thinking on that. You know, you have a lot of the younger generation who saw their parents go through the Great Recession. and saw their parents' retirement plans lose 20, 30, 40%, you will find a lot of people in that generation, they are much more conservative with their investments because they don't want to go through the same thing that their parents went through. Now, on the flip side, Tom, I have seen people who are older that want to be more aggressive. And so that goes back to, painting that picture. Everybody is different and everybody's situation is different. If you want to be more conservative, there's nothing wrong with that. The trade-off is you have to save a lot more money because your money's not working as hard for you. And when we look at money, and I kind of equate it this way, either you have to work or the money has to work. Something has to work in this relationship
Yeah,
here.
something's got to work, right?
Right. So if the money's not working as hard as it should be, then you've got to work a little harder to get there, to get to your goal. Now, if you're more aggressive, and having the money work for you, then there's a high probability that you won't have to work as hard, with your money. So it's not as simple as it used to be, where that 60-40 portfolio was what we managed to as you got older. Sometimes it's 70-30, sometimes it's 50-50 now. But the dynamics have changed just as life has changed and people's experiences have changed.
We need to take a break, but before we do, let's take one call. We got a bunch of emails that we're going to get to after the break. But first, I want to go to Tricia, who's on the line in Ellicott City. Welcome to the program with Nicholas Abrams.
Hi, it's great to be with you today. Love the show.
Hi, good evening, good afternoon.
Back when we got the stimulus checks during the pandemic, first of all, I'm a low-income woman, 65 years old. When we got the stimulus checks, I thought, oh, good time to get back into the stock market, because when I'd been younger, I'd done okay. So I bought a bunch of individual stocks. And as of today, I own 17 stocks that are at between 40% and 99.97% down. And I own 13 stocks that are between 17% and 135% up. So net, overall, I am down a total return of 27%. And my question is, how do I know when to sell individual stocks? Like if I've lost 99%, my stock is trading for a penny. Do I keep holding on to that penny? Or when it's gone from 20, from $2 up to $200, or whatever, do I sell then, or do I go, wow, this is going to be one of those skyrocket ones?
Right.
Yeah, that's a great question, Tricia. Thank you. What do you think, Nick?
So, Tricia, I would say a couple things. When you're doing individual stocks, there's always going to be that risk and trade-off there. And remember, you're in it for the long haul. What I would recommend is doing some research on those individual stocks, especially the ones that are down, and just see what some of the analysts are saying. And so if the analysts are predicting that you're continuing, that stock is going to continue to be on a downside, you might want to liquidate and take the loss to offset some of your gains in those stocks. But really, when you're doing individual stocks, those are the risk. And you might want to look at in the future investing in some ETFs or mutual funds that can spread out that risk a little bit more. And so what that'll allow you to do is still be in the market, but instead of being concentrated in a smaller number of stocks, you've got a wider net of stocks that your money is spread out in, and that will help mitigate some of those losses in the individual
Yeah, and
stocks.
we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we are going to talk a little bit about mutual funds, about these, conglomerates of different kinds of stocks in different categories. I got some questions about that. And I know you all have some questions too. Nicholas Abrams is a CFP, a certified financial planner, and the CEO of Opulentia, a financial services company located up in Hunt Valley. And when Midday on Money continues, Nick will answer more of your savings and investment questions. You can call us at 410-662-8780. You can email us at midday@wypr.org. And before we go to a break, we pause to remember Deborah Owens. The last time Nick Abrams was here on Midday talking about financial planning, Deborah joined us as well. She was the founder of an organization called Wealthy You, which she described as a financial wellness and education company that focused in particular on women and their investment strategies. Deborah was the author of 5 books on finance and a frequent presence on TV and radio, giving sound advice with warmth and compassion. Deborah passed away last month. We were proud to have her as a guest on Midday, and we send our condolences to her husband, Terry, and their family. Deborah Owens was 66 years old.
You've been listening to Midday with Tom Hall on 88.1 WIPR, Baltimore's NPR news station.
And welcome back to Midday. Coming up tomorrow here on the show, it's going to be Midday with the Mayor. Baltimore Mayor Brandon Scott will join me to talk about the dispute between the city and the Office of the Inspector General about access to city records. Plus, Jed Dietz and New Next Film Festival curator Eric Hatch will join me for Midday at the Movies, and J. Wynn Russick will review The Great Gatsby at the Hippodrome Theater here in Baltimore. So that's coming up tomorrow here on Midday. And if you've just joined us today, it's Midday on Money. Nicholas Abrams, a certified financial planner and the CEO of the financial services firm Opulentia, joins me on Zoom. You are welcome to join us as well with your questions and comments about investing and strategies for building wealth. Our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org. So, Nick, let's get to a couple of the questions that we have from folks.
Okay.
Jen in Baltimore sends us an email, says, I've been a diligent saver all my life with the goal of retiring early. I'd heard once that you can retire if you have enough savings to only draw them down by 4% each year and live off only those withdrawals. So I'm in my late 50s and could now afford to live off 4% of my savings each year, except I do not know what I would do for health insurance if I retired now. Are there products or options related to estimating and locking in health insurance costs before I reach Medicare eligibility age? So what's your advice for a good saver, Jen, who, you know, could quit her job, but if she does, she quits her health plan too?
So yeah, that's a good question. So Jen, the short answer is yes, there are options out there. You can go get private coverage through one of the health exchanges, the Maryland Health Exchange. For example, you could go to that exchange and look at different health plans, and you're able to get those plans. Now, the caveat to that is you cannot lock in that price. So that price will change each year depending upon what the health insurance market looks like. And when you're looking at, you know, as a young retiree, when you're looking at that 4% withdrawal rate, you also want to factor in inflation as well. That's going to be a key factor in ensuring that you're able to maintain the lifestyle that you're accustomed to and making sure that you're able to still enjoy the things that you want to and have money for your later years.
Yeah, thanks for that email, Jen. And of course, we covered here on Midday and all through the media the fact that health insurance premiums are skyrocketing. In the new year, given what the bills that the Congress has passed, they were supposed to be working out a plan to, you know, tamp them down a little bit. That plan still has not come to fruition. So we'll have to see what happens. But certainly a number of people found that their premiums for health insurance were sometimes double, triple, quadruple what they had been previously. The assumption is that many of those people are going to simply go without health insurance and take the huge risk of something happening, particularly a catastrophic health event where they would not have any insurance to back them up when they get treatment.
And Tom, I just want to touch on that for a second. You know, healthcare cost is one of the major expenses, even for retirees. So even though you do qualify for Medicare, there are several gaps that Medicare does not cover. And a lot of times you have to go get some type of supplemental plan
to help fill in the gaps. And we're seeing price increases in those plans as well. So healthcare is one of those costs when you're looking at retirement, either retiring early or later, that you really have to factor in. That's going to be a major expense.
Yeah. And when you do retire, I mean, you've paid into Medicare during your working years, but the cost of Medicare, it's not free all of a sudden. You know, the cost of Medicare is pegged to how much income you will be having in retirement. So people with higher incomes are going to pay higher premiums for Medicare. Let's go back to the phones to our good friend Angela in West Baltimore. Always love hearing from you, Angela. Welcome to the show with Nick Abrams.
Oh, thank you so much, Tom. Thank you, Mr. Abrams. So I have a question with regards to individuals who may be, who have a fixed income. Maybe they're receiving disability or some kind of regular income like that. How do they address or approach savings when, in fact, you know, acquiring some, you know, significant amount of savings can actually be restricted, and they can actually face some kind of retribution if they are found to have a significant amount of savings?
Okay. So there are, depending on the situation, there are some accounts out there that people can contribute to called ABLE accounts, where you're able to fund those accounts and it does not penalize you from receiving different benefits. So it's kind of a case-by-case basis, but there can be some options out there for somebody receiving benefits but still wants to be able to save money, that they can have certain accounts that they can contribute to and it does not count against them.
Well, that's good to know, because I guess Angela's, imagining a scenario where you're on disability, but if you have too much income, those disability benefits could be, attenuated in some way. So that's a tricky high wire to negotiate. So thank you for that call, Angela, and thank you for that great idea of the ABLE accounts from Nick Abrams. Again, our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org. And Nick, we have an email from Christopher who says, when the market is up, the dollar is down significantly against foreign currencies since the new administration and its tariffs lunacy. I don't foresee it settling anytime soon. I've been investing in U.S. stocks primarily, but would like to diversify. What's a good alternative option that isn't so exposed to the dollar?
So what we saw going into last year, we saw a big jump in international investments. And it's been a rally that we had not seen in several years. When we looked at the market, U.S. stocks had outperformed international for the last several years. And going into 2025, we've seen a jump where international investments have started to increase in value. So what we tell people, you know, diversification is always the key. There's a lot going on nationally and internationally with different economic foreign policies. And I don't foresee that settling down anytime soon. So definitely when you're looking at your portfolio, you want to have money, yes, in U.S., but you also want to look at some in international investments as well, and some other type of investment. So you're diversified. So as these things happen, you know, you got yourself covered. So if U.S. markets are down and international markets are up, you still see some gain in your portfolio and vice versa.
And of course, there are a number of international stock funds that are mutual funds that invest in a whole variety of international stocks. And Christopher is right. The U.S. dollar over the last 12 months is down more than 9%. So, that's a good question from Christopher, and I appreciate that. Let me ask you a question, Nick, about mutual funds. And that is that Bloomberg and others have written about the fact that 90% of managed mutual funds, and again, a mutual fund is a collection of different kinds of stocks, different stocks from different companies, or it could be bonds that are issued by different entities. But they are, generally speaking, limited by the category. So they have things called large cap stocks or mid cap stocks or junk bonds or high yield bonds. There's a certain kind of investment that are grouped together. But I when I've read Bloomberg and the Wall Street Journal did some stories about 90% of those funds, which are managed by very smart people, don't beat what's known as an index fund, which simply takes, like, for example, the S&P, the Standard & Poor's index of 500 stocks, and a computer invests it rather than a person. And if it goes up, you're making money. And if it goes down, if the stock market generally goes down, you're losing money. But over long periods of time, these index funds, which are less expensive to the investor because you're not paying the fees to these smart people who are investing. The computer is simply making the stock. If the stock market goes up, the computer can estimate how much of the stock market you own and give you those dividends. They're so cheap to buy and to invest in, they generally outperform 90% of the managed funds. So the question would be, why ever invest in something that these, you know, very smart fund managers are managing if, generally speaking, they're not beating the computer when it comes to an index fund?
Hey, so good question on that, Tom. You know, the S&P 500 is one of the prime examples of an index, and for years has been the standard bearer that we have, you know, based everything on. The world has started to change some, and we're seeing a shift where people are looking to invest in other things besides those top 500 companies. And so when you start looking at, as the previous email, we looked at international, you even got crypto, you want to get into real estate, commodities like gold and silver. Those are the areas where you can't get with the index fund. You have a manager that's working with that. So for those exotic investments, or if you want more diversification, then you start to look at other type of funds besides the index fund. If you are plain simple, I just want an index fund, is definitely still a great option. One of the issues we're starting to see with the S&P 500 is we've seen, because of the Magnificent Seven, those AI and tech companies that are in the S&P, we're starting to see the last couple of years.
And those are companies like, you know, Amazon, Facebook, Google.
Right, yeah. Microsoft, you know, because they've appreciated so much in value of the AI push that we've seen, that when you look at the S&P 500, it's not as equally weighted. So you've got a lot of those companies make up a large portion of the S&P 500, the valuation of it. So that has started been a concern for investors and advisors about how do we shift and diversify in other areas, because when you look at the S&P, those companies are, when the capitalization of the S&P 500, their valuation is so high that, you know, clients' money, you've got a lot of money tied to the Magnificent Seven, and you don't think you do because you're in the S&P 500. You think it's equally weighted between those 500 companies. It's not. And we've seen a lot of, you know, shifts as the AI, you know, we've seen the last couple of weeks, the AI stocks have gone down some. So, you know, you want to be careful. S&P is a great way to invest money, but you still want to look at your portfolio in other areas just so you make sure you're properly diversified.
Yeah, that's an interesting point that maybe the S&P, even though it's got 500 stocks on the list, may not be as diverse as we think. That's a really interesting point. We have another email from Sarah, who's writing in from Towson. She says, I have no debt other than owing $115,000 on a mortgage that I'm paying 3.875% interest. I have about $40,000 in a high-yield savings account, which is currently getting 3.3% APR. And I'm thinking maybe I could pay my mortgage down some, but I don't want to deplete my savings. On the other hand, I feel like the interest on my high yield savings is low. How can I maximize my return on my savings or make the best use of my savings? So that's an interesting dilemma for Sarah. Do you pay down your mortgage or do you keep the money, in her case, in a high yield savings account, which is paying about 3.3% interest. What do you think, Nick?
So, of course, on this one, Tom, I have to start with the disclosure. We need a lot more information before I can make a specific recommendation. But I will talk in general on this. You know, generally, you want to have your money working for you. It goes back to what I said. You have to work where the money has to work. Now, one of the things we're seeing, you know, interest rates are starting to go down, and we're predicting rates are going to go down even further this year. When that happens, those type of accounts, those high yield money market accounts where, you know, a year or two ago you were getting 4, maybe 5% on, you're going to be at 3 and starting to get into the 2 range, maybe by the end of this year, are not as attractive. I would say, you know, you want to make sure what you have that money set aside for. Is it set aside for emergencies? What's the goal of that money before you start taking a chunk and paying down the mortgage? You know, do you have other assets to work with in case something happens? So I would say it's a little more complex than just a quick yes or no answer. You need to know what your situation is, what your plans are with that money. And then kind of you can work from there to decide if you want to deploy that capital into paying down the mortgage or just keeping, you know, the mortgage payment as is if there's no problem if you paying it.
Yeah, but and the bottom line there is that there are options. There are things yes. You can do. Yeah. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Nicholas Abrams is the founder of the financial services firm Opulentia. He's a CFP, a certified financial planner. They're based up in Hunt Valley. If you have questions about saving and investing, give us a call. Nick's with us until the top of the hour, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
You've been listening to Midday with Tom Hall on 88.1 WIPR, Baltimore's NPR news station.
And welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. If you've just joined us today, it's Midday on Money. We're talking investing and saving and planning for your financial future with Nicholas Abrams of Opulentia, a financial services firm in Hunt Valley. Nick is a certified financial planner, and he's with us until about 1 o'clock. You can call, be with us as well, 410-662-8780. Our email is midday@wipr.org. So Nick, Kyle is a listener who emails, any comment on the long-term prospects of Social Security? Is it even worth planning around? You know, and
Kyle, that's a great one.
Yeah, and I'm sure that a lot of your clients are asking that question. I'm not sure you have any particular way of knowing one way or the other, but you gotta, you know, when we talk about things that are unexpected, there's a lot of reason to be worried about the future of Social Security.
So here's my personal take on it. You know, anybody that is 40 and older, and I might say 50 or older, there's going to be absolutely no change to your Social Security. It's going to be there. So I would not worry about it. For those people in that 50 and under, I do think there are going to be some changes to it. It's going to be there. But what it looks like in the future is going to be a little different than what it traditionally is. So that could be something as changing the requirement age, the minimum age to get benefits. That is something that I've heard a lot of people talk about. Right now, you can get it as early as 62. I've heard talks of changing that minimum up to 65. But once again, that would be people for at least 50 and under, maybe even 40 and under, that change would be. The other thing I have heard about, there's a cap on the Social Security tax. So when we work, there's a certain amount of income that is subject to a Social Security tax. There's been talk of increasing that or lifting that cap up. So there are a couple different things that you hear about. But like I said, for those at a certain age range, there's not going to be any change. It's going to be there. Politicians know to make a change to Social Security is political suicide. So it's going to be a while before they do that, and it's going to it, any change would affect a much younger generation out there. But I still think it's going to be there in some form, regardless.
All right, we have another question from a listener in Baltimore, Stephanie, who says, I decided to retire from the federal government last year amid all the turmoil. I had intended to work another 5 years, but life, she writes. I have a good amount in my thrift savings account that I've left alone since I'm still getting good returns. Because of the abruptness of the decision to retire, I had little counsel and didn't know what to do. One option that was presented was to take a portion and put it into an annuity, then leave it alone for about 5 years. I'm really confused even after settling into retired life. Any information is greatly appreciated. She's a federal worker, retired, has a thrift savings account, and she's gotten the option to put some of that money into an annuity. What's an annuity, and what do you think of that option for Stephanie?
So Stephanie, there are several types of annuities out there. And the main purpose of an annuity is to provide an income, whether it's in retirement or later on down the line. So that's one type. So the goal, what you might have heard was somebody say, put a portion of your money away, let it accumulate, and then later on you would turn on another income stream. So you have your first pension, depending on your age, Social Security, and then you would have a third check from your own private annuity that you established. Another benefit of annuities, some of them are fixed annuities or fixed index annuities, where they provide a guarantee that your principal is guaranteed, so it does not fluctuate with the market. And that can be done when you're looking at doing an asset allocation where you don't want all of your money subject to the ups and downs of the market. You want to put some aside and say, hey, I know this money, my principal is protected, and you still get growth from it. Not as much growth as the market, but that's sort of your sleep easy money that you know, hey, I don't have to worry about this money, you know, fluctuating with the market. So depending on the type of annuity that you were presented with or heard about, it could have been to get income or protection on your money.
All right. Thanks for that question, Stephanie, and thanks for that answer. Nick, I want to ask you about what are known as RMDs, required minimum distributions. These are for people of a certain age, over the age of 70. But if you're thinking about retiring or have just retired, you're in your late 60s, what are the rules around those? What is an RMD? And how does that money come to you? What are the different strategies when it comes to taking your required minimum distributions?
Yeah, so required minimum distribution, think of it this way. You've put money in your retirement plans, your 401k, IRAs, and they've been sitting in those accounts for years or decades, accumulating value, and you didn't pay any taxes on any of the interest or anything as that money was accumulating. Uncle Sam says, well, great, you've got all this money in your account. At some point, we need you to start taking that money out so we can get the tax revenue on it. So that's what the required minimum distribution is. Depending on when you were born, you have to start the distributions either between age 73 or 75. And you are required to take an amount out of your retirement account each year so you can pay the taxes on it. So it's a way of generating revenue for Uncle Sam. The way you take that money out, you have a lot of flexibility. Some people take it out as a monthly check. Some people just take it out as a lump sum each year. It doesn't matter how you do it. You just have to have the money out of your account by December 31st, or there's a penalty associated with it. And that number is recalculated each year. It's based on your age and your account value. So the number is not a fixed number. It does change every year with that. So definitely when you're looking at retirement planning, if you have not done that or if you're at a certain age, you want to make sure that you're talking to your advisor to start planning for that, because it can cause a huge tax issue especially we see it with a lot of people who are, like example, federal employees who have pensions, and they're getting Social Security. Their RMDs can bump them up into another tax bracket. We really want to sit down and do some planning around how to work with that.
All right, we have time for one more question. This one comes from Rick in Silver Spring. It says, my wife and I are in our mid-70s. We're still paying off our mortgage at 3.75%, and we're both receiving monthly pensions. We have lifetime medical insurance thanks to my long federal service, and we both receive Social Security, but we have no savings left. Should we be trying to divert our fixed income into an investment vehicle of some kind?
I would say the first thing you want to look at is what your monthly expenses are and is there a surplus? So, for an example, if your income is 5,000 per month, but if your expenses are 2,500 per month, then no, I would not say there's a need to make any changes. It seems like you're on a good path, as long as nothing life doesn't happen, which always can happen. Now, if the conversation, Rick, is, your expenses are 5,000 per month. I mean, your income is 5,000 per month, and your expenses are about 4,500 per month. Then I would recommend it's time to sit down and take a look at some things to make some changes. So, you're not in a situation where your fixed income is less than what your expenses are. So might not need to look at diverting money right now, but it really just depends on what your situation is, what that threshold is between your income and expenses to help with that.
All right. Well, that's where we're going to have to leave it. And Nick Abrams, founder of Opulentia, a financial services company up in Hunt Valley, thank you so much as always. Got lots of great questions and you had lots of great answers. We always appreciate it. So we will see you again soon, I hope. Thanks.
Thank you, Tom. Been a pleasure as always.
And that's it for us today. Coming up tomorrow, it's Midday with the Mayor. Baltimore Mayor Brandon Scott joins me, plus Jed Dietz and Eric Hatch stop by with some suggestions for weekend movie going or streaming. And J. Wynn Russick reviews The Great Gatsby at the Hippodrome Theater in Baltimore. That's on the way tomorrow. Coming up now, it's Fresh Air. After news at the top of the hour, the historian and Atlantic staff writer Robert Kagan is the guest. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.
You've been listening to Midday with Tom Hall on 88.1 WIPR, Baltimore's NPR News Station.